Here we are with episode 99 of the Florida Trail Runners Podcast. And holy smokes, you know, we're almost to 100 episodes of this little podcast. For this 99th chat, we've got some stories from the Funnest 50K. This was the inaugural year for the Funnest 50K, and the race itself, it also has a 10K and 30K. And as for me, you know, I jumped in the 10K this year. But man, you know, what a course. Like, this course is super rad. Like, it's like the Florida mini mountain trail race. It's so cool out there. And on the chat, we've got your 50K champ, Mike Alberts. And we've got your 50K women's champ, Kate Morgan. And we've also got your DFL, Anna. You know, she spent the most time out there on the course. And we've got Brandon Holmes, and this dude, let me tell you about this dude, all right? So this dude, he signed up for the 30K, and while he was out there running, you know, he decided he was going to move up to the 50K. And normally people drop down. They don't drop up in a race. So that was awesome. And hey, with that, let's kick it off with some stories from the Funnest 50K.
Can you hear me okay?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I'm hanging out in the mom van in the garage to hide from the kiddos.
That's what I do. I sit in my car. That's just mostly for the dog. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Joe. How's it going, man?
Good. Hey.
Hey, can you hear me well?
Oh yeah.
Nice.
Hey, hang on. I'm trying to get my headphones to connect.
Well, hey, you know, I guess we could kick it off with, you know, some introductions. You know, what's that running background?
Yeah, I'll go first because I've been on before, so I won't go too much into my background other than to say that about 2 years ago, I decided to start doing ultras for some reason, maybe because I'm a broken person. I don't know. I just was like, I want to do something super difficult. So I guess going forward, I'm just trying to do the toughest, craziest, dumbest shit that I can find and always try to have a smile on my face as I'm doing it. So I'm trying to always look for the next hardest challenge, the next longest, hottest, toughest thing to do.
Yeah, like that Cross Florida 200.
Oh yeah, Cross Florida 200 was great, but that's just getting started. I want to do the Lollipop 240, and I'm already eyeing up Vol State for next year. There's a couple Florida runners that are going off to do Vol State, so I kind of want to join them, and then, you know, who knows? I kind of want to look into some long, unsupported stuff. So pretty much anything that's like difficult that I can test myself against is kind of what I'm looking for.
So that's interesting, because I have like a totally different vibe for the trail races, where I'm just looking to like reconnect and kind of get away from all the busyness of life. So I'm not necessarily looking for the craziest, hardest, whatever. I'm just looking for that time kind of alone out in the woods where I don't have to go out for a while. So I probably not as experienced in the ultra world as the rest of you guys, but I hope to stick around for a while.
That's funny, because like I'm somewhere in between, and I'm very new to the ultra stuff. I've only done a handful, and most of the ones I've done so far were actually like the hour cutoff ones, and I think like I didn't even make it to like a marathon distance on most of them. I was like, it was an ultra, but I took it real slow. But yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle of like finding the challenge part, like Mike said. Yeah, like seeing what I can push myself to do, but then also just trying to like enjoy it. Enjoy that solitude and that like day of just running in the woods too. So yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably the newest to the group, so I think everybody's got more experience than me. I haven't been running very long. I think I started running in December, so yeah, that's about it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
and you did that well on an 8. That's impressive.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, you've done some races up to this point too, though.
Yeah, so like I guess like long story short, like I completed grad school in 2021, and I was like 195 pounds, and I also had my first daughter my only child at that time. So I started like biking. So I started biking to get into shape and got down to like 145. And then I learned a little bit about running. And I think a marathon seemed like the crazy thing to me. I can't believe people run like 26 miles like straight. That's insane. And then in December, I had done like some Spartan races and stuff like that. And then in December, I was like, hey, I just kind of want to do something. You know, kind of like Mike said, you know, just really challenge myself and kind of see what I could do. And the 18 miles, you know, not that I was like overlooking it, but the 18 miles for the Skunk Ape seemed like not enough of a challenge. So I signed up for the 60K, which of course, you know, I DNF'd in that. But so that was like my first real race other than like I did some like a Thanksgiving 5K like way back in the day.
That was funny. I was talking to Scott Hoover after the race and he was like, he couldn't believe that. He was like, man, I saw that guy a couple races ago. And he's like, how's he so fast? What's he been doing? And so I think you inspired him to go out and try to run that course even harder because he was like, how do you run it that fast? I can't believe it. So you really impressed the race director with that performance.
Oh yeah, I just really wanted to finish, to be honest. After Skunk Ape, man, I got a whole new level of admiration and for you guys and for the people and the athletes that do this. And it was humbling. So yeah,
a lot of races I do, the main motivator for finishing is so I don't have to run anymore. Like I want to get some food, I want to lay down, I want to get something to drink. So you'll find that a lot of races, it's like you're like, I just want to finish this thing, I'm gonna run harder so I can finish sooner.
Yeah, and kind of with that, you know, of all the races out there, especially like this time of the year, how did you end up out at the funnest 50K?
I don't really know, man. I mean I don't really know like what I'm doing. I think like Facebook just kind of like hears my conversations. So they recommend this stuff and I'm like, oh, funnest, this sounds like fun. And I mean, it looked kind of challenging, and I think like somebody was saying earlier, the thing that appeals to me, like I don't have any desire to run like a bunch of miles like strictly on pavement, you know. So like the course, even though I knew it was challenging, was like appealing to me. And then I was just really kind of mad about like you know, DNFing at Skunk Ape, so I kind of wanted to get something in there soon just to kind of make me get a little bit of revenge from the revenge, I guess. And I guess in some ways it kind of works out to my benefit, because I guess like ignorance is bliss. I don't really know like how difficult like some of these courses are, how easy they are. I guess in some ways it's kind of beneficial because I just sign up not really knowing what I'm getting myself into at the time.
Oh, that's half the fun.
So I've actually been running those trails for years that course was on. I live like 5 miles away. There's plenty of long runs where I start up, like loop through the trails there and pop out through the scrubs, make a big long loop. So I ended up running the race just because it was like, that's my backyard playground.
That's super cool. I had no idea what I was getting into. And I actually, my buddy and I signed up for that race with another friend of ours because he was like, it was going to be his first 50K. So we're like, all right, Ryan's first 50K. And so we've given him a lot of shit since then because Ryan didn't come to his first 50K. He didn't make it. I'm going to make him listen to this. Like, Ryan. So we'll do another one. But he had a long day the day before and was partying and watching his sports team and didn't make it. So me and Will came out and we're like, well, we're gonna run Ryan's 50K for him. But like I had zero desire to sign up for this race, honestly, because I was like, that looks super technical, and I know I'm gonna be falling and having a hard time, but I was like, but it's Ryan's first 50K, so I gotta be there to support him. And then he didn't come out and I was like, well, now we got to run it, but like my heart's not in it. And that first loop, so for me, Mike, you're a beast, because like me, that first loop, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is a terrible idea, and I have to do this four more times. to be honest, that first loop was like breaking me, and then every loop after that was just like, well, I might as well just do one more. I was a dead last, but I was like, I could do one more, even if I just gotta like walk it, because I fell the first loop and I fell the last loop and the last loop. I went down so hard because my body was just like done. I went down so hard and my husband was with me and I was just like, he like turned and he's like, and you like automatically did like a shoulder roll, so that's great. And I was like, yeah, but I hit that hard, like I hit that ground so hard, like it had offended me. I just like rolled around my back and I was like, oh God, like really? But I was like, I'm not broken. I didn't skin anything. I can keep going. So I was like really proud of finishing that race and like being the last person out there. I was like, wow. But like, that was a cool experience for me, honestly. Later I was still talking about it with my husband. I'm like, that was probably one of my favorite races to like, just to finish it, because it was difficult and because my heart wasn't in it from the beginning. And I was like, oh, this is crap. Like, I could leave. Ryan didn't even come out. We don't have to do this. but I was really proud of myself for just keep on going. So, and then, I'm going to do more of that.
It's kind of funny. I was actually like really close to not running Funnest 50K, but I promised Scott I was going to run it. And I was like, oh, I'm like, maybe I'll just use it as like a training run and like build up a really strong week and just go out there and have fun. And then like the week before I was like, oh, Scott was messaging me like, I got you to win this. And he was getting me all pumped up. So I'm like, oh, I'll do like a quick taper and actually try to race it. And, you know, race day came and I was like, you know what? I'm actually kind of happy I decided not to use a 30 miles on mountain bike trails as like my weekend long run, because I think that would have been absolutely miserable. And I really, after I did Georgia Death Race, I was expecting just to drop it and say, hey, you know, sorry about that. But he started messaging me saying how excited he was that I got to, you know, to run this course and how much he liked the course. And I actually kind of felt bad about dropping it. So I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to use it as a training run. I'm going to build up and then have a heavy week and use that as like a nice fun weekend run. And like a week before, I was kind of like thinking about it. I was like, you know what, maybe I'll try to race this and actually taper a bit, hydrate, have good nutrition, do everything that you probably should do before, you know, a race or just in general everyday life. So I spent the prior couple of days really hydrating. I'm like, I'm going to treat this as an actual race and not just a fun run. So, you know, day of, it came, and by the second loop, I was feeling pretty good. And by the third loop, I was in third or fourth place. And I made a decision, like, I think I'm going to try to push for the win, because I was just feeling so good because I hydrated and I ate so well, you know, before and during the race. So I'm really happy I decided to treat that one seriously and go into it as a serious race, because not only was it a fun race, but the course, I know we'll talk about the course a bit, but I've never had a loop course that was so engaging and fun. Like by the third or fourth loop, I kind of had the course memorized, but even after I had like every turn memorized, there wasn't really a point where you get bored. Every like 5 minutes, the terrain changes from like mountain bike trail to like nice winding trail to a nice water view. So it was like you have this constant stimulation going into that each loop to where it kept it exciting. And I highly recommend, even though it's a loop course and a lot of people are put off by loop courses, I don't know, this one was just something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Mike, you didn't have to sign up for the 50K. So like, because you know, I did the 10K, because there's the 10K, 30K, 50K. And you know, how did you guys end up, you know, signing up for the 50K? Because I know in this group, not all of you originally signed up for the 50K.
I'll go really quick because mine's an easy answer. Whenever I see a race, I always sign up for the longest distance no matter what, because I have some kind of issue. So even I wanted to do the 18 miler, but I was like, if I don't do the 18 miler, all the 50K runners are going to be looking at me like, why didn't he run the 50K? Even though like that doesn't happen at all. In my head, I'm like, well, I have to do the longest distance because that's what everyone expects me to do.
This makes total sense. Runner's logic. What's going to be the worst one I can do? Yeah, let's do that.
See, that's awesome. For the 50K, because I was like, that's what's going to keep me out there for the most time. And I actually had run Boston for the first time the Monday right before. So that was like 5 days after Boston, and Boston I didn't run super hard, but like I'm a flatlander, so you know, the hills still got me, and we had traveled with the whole family, so I was like kind of wiped out from that experience. And it was just so much overload with people and the crowds and the city, all in a great way, but like I just needed to reset. And all I could think about is like Saturday, I get to go disappear into the woods and just zone out. And the longer the distance, the longer I get to zone out and kind of like reset and come down from the travel and all the excitement of that type of thing. So,
yeah. And because Anna, cool. You know,
yeah.
If Ryan was doing the 50K, you could have just done a 10K or 30K and cheered him on. Yeah.
I could have, but I can't do that. Like, this is the thing with me. If my friend signs up, like I've run quite a few of like people's first marathons with them, because that's, I'm like, because I'm the toxic running friend that talks them into it or like gets them drunk and has them sign up. So I'm like, I promise I will be there with you. We will do it together. So yeah. So if he signed up for it, I was like, yeah, man, I'm not going to miss that. So, and then it's okay. We're going to do another 50K coming up, but now he knows he's got to redo it. But I was actually grateful that because of him signing up that I got to experience this. So it all worked out. But yeah, I could have dropped down. Yeah. But yeah, after I just like every loop, I was just like, just one more.
And that's the thing, because some people, but you know, they drop down. Brandon, you dropped up.
Yeah, I guess that's not too common, I guess, from what I hear afterwards. But I don't know. I signed up for the 30K. Like I said, you know, Skunk Ape was like my first real race. So I'm still, you know, kind of figuring out like what my body can do and, you know, testing my body's limits. And I had a lot more humility. Like when I ran Skunk Ape, I just thought people like ran, you know. So I just got out there and ran. I didn't know that there was like walking or like fueling or anything like that or like eating. So I left Skunk Ape with like a lot of humility, and but I finished the 30K like midway through the final loop. I felt pretty good still, you know. And I think like a lot of people in this group and others, you know, I like the feeling of just being spent, you know. I like the feeling of not having anything left and just giving everything. And so I said, well, you know, can I go for two more loops? I seen Scott, you know, and he said, yeah, I'll catch up with you. And I decided to do it. And, you know, I was like, hey, if I have to walk a little bit at the end, that's fine. But, I felt like I had a little more. So,
yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah. So obviously this is Kate's backyard. She's been there before. She's seen these trails. You know, have y'all been out there before to see it prior to the race?
Mm-mm. I did the preview run like 2 weeks before, but yeah, I definitely, like Mike said, I recommend people, you know, if they do this race next year, definitely recommend getting it and going out there and trying it, because I just didn't realize that there was like stuff like this in Florida. You know, I didn't even know that was an option, and it was really remarkable.
Yeah, anyone who's run Ragnar out at Alafaya, it made me think of the Red Loop in a lot of ways, but quite a bit more technical. Like, I was like, oh, it's going to be like the Red Loop, but I've done that at night while drinking, so I can do that. And I was like, this was not like that. I was like, I can't watch my face the whole time. But it was so good because it was so engaging. Yeah, there was never a dull, like, zoning out moment, because you constantly had to be, you know, watching your next step. So, yeah, so it was cool.
Yeah, the cool thing about the mountain bike trails in Florida, and specifically this course, is that, you know, you roll up to the park and you're in the parking lot and you look out and you see trees and you have no idea that like a couple tenths of a mile there are these giant crazy like mountain bike jumps. And so you'd be surprised how many little spots around Florida. Like, I know there's a like Vortex in Central Florida, and out where I am there's a smaller like Malabar bike trails. But you never know like what's right in your backyard. These like crazy, you know, 20-foot climbs. These, you know, four foot, you know, cliff drop offs. So you have to jump down on an actual course. So it's Florida's got some surprising terrain.
Yeah, that was a big thing too for me, because like I live in Dade City, right by Lakeland, and I've never even been to this place before until Scott's, you know, one of his course preview runs.
So I actually met Scott. I was out there biking one day, and I had seen him and James both, I think, like a couple weeks in a row running the trails. And like, I never saw people running the trails. So I finally caught up with them in the parking lot, and like runners do, just like, hey, we're best friends because we run these trails, kind of thing. So that's how I got connected with them. But when they said they were looking to put on a race here, I was like super excited, because when I discovered those trails, it just seemed like, I can't believe this is right around the corner, and I had no idea it existed. So I thought it was really cool that they were gonna like bring that to a bunch of other people.
Yeah, and it's like, speaking of these trails, you know, for people who haven't seen these trails at all before, you know, what's it actually like out there?
It's wild. I could imagine there's some runners that have never been out there that like after the first I think it's a half a mile kind of on these twisting trails kind of by the water. And all of a sudden you come up to this climb, and then all this, there are these bike ramps that go like over the trail, and there are these 5-10 foot, you know, rolling ups and downs. Well, I'm rolling. They're actually pretty, they're pretty sharp, you know, inclines and declines. And so you just feel like you stepped into another world. So it's honestly quite shocking if you don't know what to expect. And I kind of had an idea because I saw Scott post some pictures, but seeing it in person and seeing, you know, how high some of these little, you know, mounds that these mountain bikers built, it's pretty crazy. That's all I can say.
Well, there's also like the sections where there's, I'm forgetting what part of it, but like there's so many routes everywhere you step that you have to be just super careful, especially like for me by that like fourth and fifth loop. Like I had to be cognizant not to get sloppy with my feet because, you know, like you land on a root wrong and start rolling an ankle. And then there's just the winding single track and then climbing up the boardwalks and the pavers embedded in the ground and the drops. So there's just like so many different things as you go through there, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of twisting your ankle and falling, there were like a few sections to where, I mean, it's nothing compared to like being in a mountain in like Georgia and falling down the side, but there was a few drops to where I thought like, oh, if I misplace and misstep, like I'm taking a tumble and there's a serious chance that I'll, you know, break a leg, break an arm. So there are some sections where you're kind of weary of, okay, I'm actually up pretty high and there's a straight drop off. And like you said, roots, rocks, you know, there was a few pretty large 12, 13, 14 foot gators that I saw too in the water that were kind of, you know, looking up at you, looking a little hungry. So it was, this isn't just, you know, a flat trail. This is, you know, you got to be a little bit cognizant of where you're at.
Yeah, Mike, because, you know, you've ran some real mountain races out there. You know, what do you think about, how does this compare to like any kind of mountain race?
So it's completely different yet very similar, and that's confusing, but I'll describe that as saying that there's nothing quite like a sustained long uphill and downhill. There's something to where you can't really replicate running downhill for, you know, multiple miles in a row in Florida. It's you can't really get it, but on these trails you hit pretty much the same muscles. So after a few laps on one of these mountain bike courses, you're hitting that VMO muscle, that teardrop muscle that's in your quadriceps. Your calves, your ankles are feeling that same angle that you hit, and your hamstrings are getting hit real bad too. So it's quite different than actually, like I said, going uphill, downhill for multiple miles in a row. But at the same time, there are these really sharp inclines and declines, and it's still hitting those same muscles. So if you were going to train for a mountain race, you know, that has 10, 20, 25,000 feet of elevation gain, my recommendation would be definitely get on some actual mountains. But if you're in Florida and you can't take a, you know, vacation to go train out in Georgia or Tennessee for a whole week, hitting the mountain bike trails is a very close second.
Yeah, I like that, because I definitely was thinking, like, every time that I do a technical race on trails, I'm like, man, I need to do more of these, because the next like 3 days my legs are wrecked. And they're like, we don't hit those muscles when we run on the road. What have you done? And every time I'm like I need to get on more trails. Like technical ones like that, though, for sure. Yeah. And like you said, those inclines and declines, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and most people, when they train for like a mountain race, like Georgia Death Race, they do tons and tons of incline on the treadmill. You know, they'll get 100,000 feet of elevation gain on a treadmill over a month, but what they don't do is any downhill. And so they'll go out, they'll go to a race, and they'll be fine on the uphill, and they'll hit the downhill hard. The first 5-10 miles, it'll be like they're floating in midair, and all of a sudden, you know, 30-45 minutes, two hours later, all of a sudden those quadriceps, those hamstrings just start to tighten up and shut down. So getting some actual downhill training to me is more important than the uphill for those races, because you're going to want to bomb those downhills when you hit them. And if you haven't gotten those muscles ready for that, they're going to come back and they're going to bite you in the ass real quick.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, because yeah, the next like day when I went for a run, it was any kind of slight decline or whatever that I was doing that my quads were screaming. said that's so interesting. Yep. They were. I was like, this isn't even a hill. And they were. I was like, this is just a sidewalk that's a little bit lower down the other side. Sheesh. Yep.
Yeah, the downhill thing's super crucial, because I remember that when I was out at H9, Jason Green warned me to walk the downhills, but I didn't, and I definitely paid for it. But that's what I was thinking about this funnest course out there at that Joyce Hart Park is, hey, for, like, if you're going out to at least like an H9 or GDR or something up in the Georgia Mountains, this is a nice little, you know, a training course right in our backyard.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. And I'll say I was kind of thinking about this podcast as I was on my runs today. And if I had any recommendation for someone doing, a race in Georgia, out in California, anything with vert, I think number one would be focus on that base, that endurance. You're not going to get anywhere if you don't have a good base endurance. I don't care if it's, you know, weight training, if it's running hills, if anything affects your base endurance, drop it like a bad habit. Focus on that base endurance. Second would be to actually get your legs on a course with technical terrain. Best case scenario would be, 4 to 6 weeks out from a race. If you can make it up to the mountains and do like a weekend mini training camp, that would be beneficial. But if you can't, like I said, a lot of us have families and lives, and we can't just take a weekend to go train in the mountains. Second best would definitely be hitting these mountain bike courses and really feeling how the uphills and, most importantly, the downhills feel. And I think third most important would be to, get your cross training in, get your deadlifts, your squats, some heavy stuff. If you do cross training, if you don't do cross training, focus on at least body weight stuff. But yeah, it would be, aerobic base first. Second would be getting your feet on actual terrain, like a mountain bike course. And then lastly, if you have the time and it doesn't affect your main training, would be hitting that cross training.
Yeah. And you could do that in the shower, just hit some air squats and some calf raises.
Oh, I've actually been doing some of those in the shower, especially the stretches with the hot water, and it loosen up the muscles.
Yeah. So coming in the race morning, you get your bib, you check in, what was it like at the start of the funnest 50K this year?
We were just busy texting Ryan, like, where are you, man? Oh, and then we set up our tent and got our stuff ready. And yeah, it was like a fun vibe. Yeah, just good people. So we were excited to get started.
I think I'm seeing everybody set up their tent. I just like dropped one bag outside the van, and I had like no setup, and I had total like imposter syndrome. Like, oh, I don't have the cool tent, and I don't have all the cool chairs and the whole whatever. But like in the end, I'll pack all this stuff in my car, and then like I never even go to it. I might grab one thing out real quick and just keep going. So I thought it was really cool because there was all these people that like I don't see at the local road races that we have. So it was definitely brought in like new faces, which was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I'll say it was the perfect example of like a low cost old school ultra, where Scott said, hey, everyone, go line up on the sidewalk over there. And everyone just kind of wandered over to the sidewalk, and he gave, a few minute long introduction, and he went, okay, ready, set, go. And it was, there's no corralling. It was hey, faster people get up front, slower people go to the back. So I love those ultras because it's just about running. Like you guys were saying, it's a trail race. So the community is different than a road running community. It's still a bit competitive, but there's a lot more camaraderie. And so just kind of everyone huddled in a circle, standing, on a behind a sidewalk, getting ready to start, the race. It's like a good feeling of, the community, not very stressful, like, hey, we're about to go out and hit some trails and have some fun. So those are my favorite races, are the lower cost, lower pressure ones.
Yeah, I think that's definitely like why I'm getting hooked on ultras. I still love road races too, but the vibe at ultras is so fun and chill. And yeah, the camaraderie, everybody's out there cheering, feeding you and having a good time. And, yeah, I like that vibe a lot. Yeah. It's got me hooked.
Yeah, I just, echo, what everybody's saying about the vibe of the community, but kind of like Mike was saying earlier, it's kind of interesting, you know, because like I haven't done a lot of races, but this was cool because you get out there and you're just kind of like, there's like soccer fields and stuff, you know, and it's just like a regular park, and you don't even know that it's kind of like you're about to step into Narnia. You know, you just go like a tenth of a mile off, and it just really feels like you're in a, you know, like you're just in a completely different world, you know, and you're just wondering, like, everybody's out there like watching their kids play soccer. You're like, do they have any idea, like, what these psychos are doing? Like,
right. What's going on over here?
Yeah, does anybody have any idea that they're sipping, like, you know, Capri Sun? And I'm over here, like, you know, trying to reach for a mustard packet in my, you know, in my dad. They're over there eating, like, you know, catered lunches. So, but yeah, it was just really cool and it was really fun. You know, I think they did a really good job. And yeah, and I did get there early too, which I didn't do for the Skunk Ape. So I got there early and it was just kind of nice seeing the calm before the storm and, you know, getting there, you know, when the sun comes up. So yeah, really cool vibe.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually, you know, you take off on that course and for the 50K, you've got to do this loop like five times. So take me into that first loop. You know, how'd loop number one go down?
Loop number one was so fun for me because it was a mix of the 10K, 30K, and 50K. So you saw, you know, the 10K and some of the 30K runners just absolutely, you know, bouncing off of roots. There are these little ramps that kind of go off to the for the mountain bikers that they can kind of ride up on. And there was people running up on those, like having a good time. And you can kind of tell who, you know, the 10K runners were. And I even saw some of the 50K runners, you know, going pretty wild the first loop, which it was funny because by the second and third loop, they were the ones that were kind of panting and rubbing their legs a bit. But it was an absolute, I think I said this before, it was like a roller coaster because all the runners were kind of corralled pretty closely. And so, especially after that, during that first mile, when we really started hitting the mountain bike course, it was like this, like honestly, a roller coaster of runners going over kind of like ants on a hill. And it was just, it was a sight to see, especially because there were some parts of the course that went over other parts of the course. And so there were runners running over the bridge underneath. And I'd almost use the word chaotic, but it was like a nice controlled chaos for that first loop.
Yeah, I was a little worried about the first loop, just knowing all the single track and how tight it can get about it being a little congested. But it seemed to thin out fairly quickly. I was also, you know, trying not to get caught up in the excitement of like the 10K and maybe some people that didn't know what they were getting into, which is kind of the tricky part when you're doing like 50K and there's people out there that are just out there for one loop because they can go nuts and it won't hurt them too much. But I was pleasantly surprised that it kind of thinned out, at least where I was sitting, pretty quickly. So there wasn't like any big traffic jams or holdup or anything. And I was kind of looking forward to the solitude anyway, so I didn't mind that it thinned out pretty quick. So.
Yeah, for me, the first loop, like I said already, was honestly like the toughest mentally for me. And I'm not sure why. I think it was just, well, I was not prepared either for this race because, again, I was like, I'm just there to support someone else. So I didn't hydrate properly. I didn't have good nutrition the days before, you know, et cetera. So then I was feeling that on that first loop and it was pretty warm and stuff too. So then like I real quickly mentally was like, ugh, this is not for me. Like, I don't think I need to do this. And then I had to like try to keep getting my head back in the game. And then also for me, though, something I'm learning doing more of these races versus road races, and you know, road races, if I do like a half, I usually don't, I previously would just run it fast and wouldn't even like drink water throughout the whole time. So I'm like, I got less than 2 hours to do this. I can go without water. And now having to switch my whole game with ultras and being like, no, it's important to like make yourself drink, you know, drink some salty liquids and eat some food. And so I was like, I went into it fasted as well. So I hadn't had anything to eat. I've had an energy drink. So I was like super smart. So then on that first loop when I was bombing hard, then I very quickly was like, oh no, when I get back to the aid station, I'm going to start eating stuff. I'm going to start, you know, drinking those elementees, whatever. And I started doing that. And of course it made a world of difference. I was like, oh, I can go again. I can do another loop. But yeah, so it's like, this is a very, very new, but it's a good learning process for me is figuring out that hydrating and nutrition while running these things. So, yeah. But yeah, after that first one,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think on that first loop, I think I drank 32 ounces of water before I even started sweating. By the time I finished that first loop, I had drank two water bottles and also had like a gel and a banana, because I've had so many races where I wasn't thirsty and I put off drinking. And then when I started sweating, all of a sudden I just crashed. So I was like, I'm going to overhydrate and see, you know, overhydrate from my mind, which is probably, you know, perfect hydration because it was starting to get hot. So I was absolutely focused on drinking water even when I didn't want to.
that's awesome to like hear that advice from you and stuff too, because it's like you've learned this stuff and I'm starting to figure it out, but trial and error. So I was like, I should have been drinking some water. I sweat so much on that first loop. I was like, this is crazy, I need to take in something, because it was like super humid right off the bat. So learning things. It's a learning process, but it's good.
Yeah, it was definitely the same for me. Since I'm so new, every mile is like a learning experience, I feel like. And one of the things I purposely did on this first loop is I wanted to go fast, you know, because I think we all enjoy running fast, but I purposely dialed myself back because I said, hey, I really want to finish this, and I really want to, you know, and then if I have some left in the tank, you know, I'll pick it up at the end. And so that was big for me, I think, was just kind of like purposely like going much slower. And like others have said, that's what I enjoy about the ultra running. I enjoy the kind of mental, the kind of almost chess game aspect to it. And as much as you can control those things and learn. And yeah, so.
And okay, yeah, so you brought it up with, you know, because this course is surrounded by water. Did y'all feel that just trapped in that hot pocket of humidity?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. I was like, oh, and I'm like, I know we live in Florida. I know we accept this, but I was like, this is intolerable. I was like, this is on purpose this morning. It was so humid. Yeah. But then, you know, like it does, it burnt off quite a bit and then being out there, the cloud cover rolled in after a while too, and there's a cool breeze, so it's just like sticking it out. Then the weather changed, of course it did, so it got better.
Yeah, because I just did the 10K and like my shirt was soaked, my shorts were soaked, and my socks were already soaked.
Yeah.
The good thing about the course was that it was shaded most of the time, and that there were certain sections to where, I mean, there were a lot of trees, but it wasn't like a closed in canopy of trees. There was a little bit of breeze and there was that cloud cover that kind of came in and cooled it down a little bit. So, it's Florida it's Florida in summer, early summer already. It's hot.
I know. I'm still going to be mad at it, but I know I choose to live here. I've lived here for like 13 years.
Well, the good thing about the humidity is that it, for me at least, it helps me build up like that, like I was saying, that endurance base. So when you go off and you do a race in, you know, somewhere like Georgia or even further up north where it's less humid, you have like that, I don't know, it's like a superpower of, oh, you know, people think it's hot when it gets 70 out and you're like, oh, this... I'm used to Florida where it's in the 80s and humid and the feels like it's 100 and something. Like, give me some dry heat any day. So it comes in handy during those winter months.
It's like the poor man's altitude saying. Because, like,
exactly. Like, I'm pretty sure people have said that. Yes.
When I went out to Colorado for the USA 30K champs, like, I had no problem with, like, in any of the altitude, because I was like, man, you know, maybe that poor man's altitude is real.
Yes, I've been told by many people.
Yeah, so, you know, after lap one, you know, the 10Ks are done. I'm done. I'm already cracking a beer. And then it's just the 30Kers and the 50Kers left on the course. And, you know, eventually you make it to that third loop. You know, how did that third loop go down for y'all?
Well, personally, for me, the third loop is the one where I decided to pick it up a bit. I had a plan of The first loop, go out and do it sort of fast, but hold back. The second loop was planned to be my slowest loop to where I can kind of maintain, some, you know, hold back some energy. And then the third loop was where I was going to start picking it up. And I found myself, I think I mentioned this, I found myself in third or fourth place on the third loop. And by that loop, there's a few runners that I was running with that had fallen behind because the heat kind of started. And once that heat kind of started hitting and I was still feeling good, I knew in my head, I'm like, well, if the heat's hitting everyone around me, it's definitely hitting the people in first and second and third. So, you know, if I start picking up a bit, I can start catching them. And so I kind of stuck to my plan for once in my life and, you know, ran the first two easy and that third one started picking it up. And like I mentioned before, the course, it's such a fun course that by the third loop, I thought I was going to be bored out of my skull, but I was actually starting to learn, you know, the turns and learn where the next, you know, landmark, so to speak, were going to be. And so I was actually kind of looking forward to each landmark as they were coming up. Cause like I said, I was starting to learn the course and I was feeling more comfortable.
For me, the third loop was when, I was just like, it was a significant point. Cause that's when my buddy Will was like, he was not feeling well. So it was again, because of the just sweating a lot. And then I think he was losing a lot of salt in that. And so he started to get kind of delirious or just disoriented. And so that's, which at that point, cause like towards the second half of that third loop, that's when I was like, he started to feel that way. So then I was like on a mission to get him just back to some food and hydration, some salt. So that kind of took me out of whatever I was going through and just helping him get back. And then that's when he decided to, well, he tried to start the fourth loop and then he was like, nah, his knee was bugging him too much. And so he pulled out at that point. And then I kept going and had a buddy come run with me the fourth loop. And then my husband mostly just walked with me the fifth loop. But yeah, but the third loop was like, all right, got to get Will some salt. He's like, he's talking to people that aren't there. No, to be fair, he was talking to me. And then someone else, another runner, came up behind me, so I let her pass me, and then she was between us, and he thought it was still me, and he was carrying on the conversation with her, and then she passed him. He's like, what was I talking about to that person? Yeah. I was like, I don't know, man, we got to get you some salt. Come on.
No, that's actually why I train a lot in the heat, and it's going to sound completely insane, but I actually train in with a sauna suit around my house. I run around, you know, close to my house in a sauna suit in the summer because it kind of makes me go wonky in the head a little quicker. And so it's actually my mental training of, you know, making sure that I'm keeping hydration, nutrition, and keeping a straight head. Because if you've never raced in the heat and that starts, and the heat starts affecting like your thoughts, like it can easily throw you off and put you in a bad place. So I do a lot of like extreme heat training just to make sure that I can keep a level head. So it's quite a tough thing to do to keep your head in the heat.
Yeah.
I feel like for me was like totally nondescript. But I had like gone into it. Like my plan for a five loop course is like, the first loop is just a warm up. The second loop, you're just kind of cruising. The third group gets a little like ho hum. And then like the fourth loop, I'll allow myself to be kind of like pissy pants, you know, like I'm tired. just kind of like grumble a little bit. But then like the fifth loop is great because it's like the farewell loop where you're just like, goodbye. I don't have to see this anymore. And, you know, the last time. And so like, that third loop, anytime I'd start getting thoughts like, it's kind of hot and like, you know, I don't really need to put in a 31-mile run today. Like, I'd be fine at 18. And then I'm like, but you're okay. You can do it. So I just kept telling myself, like, wait till the fourth loop and then you can piss and moan through that one. And then you get to the fifth loop and then it's just a big party. So that was kind of my mindset for the whole approach to it.
Yeah, because Brandon, you know, you hit that final third loop and it could be the last loop for you.
I felt good, man, and I just, you know, and I knew I had more left in me, and I was just really pissed, you know, especially after getting three loops. Cause I mean, obviously I researched, but I'm still so new to the game. So like when I did, you know, when I did the Skunk Ape, man, I was just so freaking mad that I didn't finish. And once I got to like loop 3 and 4 on this course, I was like, well, if I played it smarter, I could have finished. Like I probably could have, you know, even if it was dead last, I could have finished Skunk Ape. And so around like 3, I think that's the time, like, I think Mike was like, he was like on his 4th, but I think I bumped into him at the mid-aid station. He was flying by and he grabbed like one of like the builder's bars or something, or like chocolate bar. And I was like, this guy looks fast and looks like he knows what he's doing. And I was like, I guess I'll take one of those too, you know, I'll have it. And so like I grabbed one, man, and said a little bit of chocolate was like, it was, oh man, you know, it was like the most miraculous thing ever. I felt rejuvenated and I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna go for 2 loops. And then when I came around and like once I told Scott, once I asked him, I could kind of like back myself into the corner, you know. I was like, can I go for 2? I was like, well, I'm not quitting now, you know. I'm like, I'm going for 2 more, you know, like I'm not gonna. So but yeah.
Yeah, my advice to you is to do a lot of races. You know, as much as your body can take. But I have learned, not only are they fun, I love them because they're fun, but each ultra I do, especially the first couple that I, the first year of doing them, I learned so much each race that I like didn't learn doing long runs. Like not until I was really out there in a 30, 40, 50 miles out, I was learning about, you know, foot care, nutrition. And I mean, I made a lot of mistakes the first few races, but with every mistake comes, you know, a lesson of, oh, hey, this didn't work, but this actually works. So I'm going to work on this next time, or I'm going to see if this works. So, you know, if you can, if your body can allow and your schedule can afford it, you know, and not every race has to be a race. You can treat a race as a training run. You know, you can enter a 50 miler and say, hey, I want to just do this one as a training run for, you know, another race coming up. You don't have to take it seriously. I find that instead of doing long runs, I just sign up for a race and then I end up actually racing it really hard and wearing my body down. But one of these days I'm going to actually use a race as a long run. But yeah, long story short, I'm just trying to tell you, do a lot of these races, because you're going to learn so much from each one and you're going to meet more and more people from the community and make more and more friends.
Yeah, that's definitely, I'm signed up for, you know, about 5 or 6 more races for this year. But yeah, that's the coolest thing that's been, because I don't really come, I was never an athlete, you know, in that sense of the word. You know, I did some like weightlifting just on my own at the gym. But, you know, just to echo what everybody else said, man, that's been the coolest thing of joining in. You know, everybody's kind of welcome with open arms and everybody's shared, you know, been willing to share their knowledge and share their experiences. And it's just been a super cool group of people to be around.
Yeah, because like every single time you learn this, you learn that, and it just takes you further and further. And finally, you know, it takes you to that final loop. You know, how did that final loop go down for y'all?
Yeah, I was definitely happy on that last loop that it was the final. I would have liked the 4th loop to be the final one, to tell you the truth, but the last, it wasn't too bad, you know, mentally, but I was definitely, I finished and I was like, I could not do a 6th loop if you paid me for both physical and mental reasons. Like we were all been saying, we were so happy on that final loop because it was the last one. But for me personally, I knew the second place runner was like a few minutes behind me. So it wasn't like a victory lap by any means. It was always, I always pretended like he was 30 seconds behind me. So I made it super stressful. And then on the last mile, last 2 miles, my calves were cramping up really bad. So I made a joke at the finish line because someone goes, why aren't you running faster? And I go, it's like I'm running on stilts. I can't, you know, my calves are cramping up. And it was kind of my body's way of saying like, okay, we're done. And I was like, no, we have like 2 more miles left. We have this, like, get through it. So it was a fun loop, but it was very painful and very stressful. And, you know, it was fun, but I was happy that it was over.
Yeah. So I tripped, I think 4 times, but never went down. Like I always caught myself. And then I went down on nothing, like on a flat part of the course. And it was, I looked at my watch, it's like 29.96 miles. And I'm like, I've made it the whole day. And then lose it and like scrape up my ankle. And of course, you know, I'm like, I'm old enough that like when I fall, I just sit there and I'm kind of like, okay, is everything still attached? Like, is anything bleeding? Did I break anything? And then, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm good. There's like a little scrape on the ankle and got up and kept going. But I just thought it was ironic that like I lasted that long and then just ate shit at the Man, I think I was just like a happy little goofball that last loop. Like you get kind of hot and you get kind of silly. And, you know, I'm just like, I just went to this crazy, silly, happy place in my head. I think I started singing like little stupid songs over and over. And then coming off of, what is it? The beast on the west side, the last, you know, like little real hilly part that you come off of before it's just flat back in. Like when I came down that hill, I was like, let's go. Like I was just super excited, picked up the pace and couldn't get to the finish line fast enough. So there's something about getting kind of like slap happy goofy on that last lap. Mm-hmm. But I also wasn't like, I wasn't redlining it. I wasn't really pushing it. So like, I still, you know, I hadn't maxed out that day. So I had kind of plenty left in me to kind of be silly and goofy, I guess. I had no idea that like where I was place-wise, I knew there was Angela that I kept seeing was always in front of me for like all four laps. And then on that fifth lap, like a couple miles in, like I'm coming back and she's heading out. And I was like, how did you get behind me? You've been in front of me the whole time. And she's like, oh, I went swimming. And my first reaction is like, oh my God, are you okay? Because I thought I went swimming meant like L and landed in the water. And she's like, no, it was intentional. I just figured I'd go for a swim. So that like kind of blew my mind. Cause I'm like, have you looked in the water? But you know, like, she seemed cool with it. So that was kind of wild. And I guess she had been in first. I didn't know like who else was ahead of her. So like when I finished, I really had no idea like where I was, you know, in terms of the other women out there, but I just had a like super happy day out there. So
yeah, my buddy and Will and I think we crossed paths with you when you were out there and you were on your last one and we were on our third. And, but yeah, well, you said something about like the next guy's right behind me and we're like, okay, yeah, man, you got this. And then you said like, you know, if he comes, you were joking. Like if he comes up, yell at him coming. And we're like, we got it. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, yell if he's coming. So know how far away he is. And I was like, no, don't do that. That's,
I took that very seriously. Not, I was like, Will, I know. I was like, Will, we got to watch out.
Yeah. How far behind me was he?
I don't even know, because, like, somebody else passed, but I think there was, I mean, nobody else came up on us for quite a while. Okay. For, like, quite a while. And then whoever did, I feel like they were doing the 30, though. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. But it worked, right? That phantom shadow behind you.
Oh, yeah, that shadow run. Just to pretend like he was right around the corner every time.
Yep.
Yeah, for me, it was, you know, I was definitely like a victory lap of it being done with, but yeah, I was like emotional, man. I don't know. Like I said, I'm so new. I don't know if everybody had this, but I was like laughing at times. Like then I would like think about my daughter, and I would like tear up, and then I'd be like, "What's going on?" Like, and I'm not that type of person usually. You know, I work in I have a very like quote unquote like stressful job where you have to be extremely stoic. So I'm usually not like emotional. So it kind of threw me off. Cause I was like laughing, happy, tired. I was just like, this is like really weird, but it felt good. I was like, I kind of like feeling like this, you know, but, my mission was accomplished. You know, I felt spent when I got to the end, and that's kind of what I was looking for. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brandon, if there's a race where I don't think about my wife or kids and like tear up and get sad, then I didn't run it hard enough or I didn't run it long enough. It's almost every race that I do. Same thing. You go through these waves of emotion, and it was for Forgotten Florida. I did that at the beginning of this year. I actually called my wife at mile 85, and I was bawling, crying, saying, I'm a bad husband, I'm a bad father. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I'm off doing these races and you're there with the kids and I'm absent from their life. And she's like, you run a lot, but like you're there for them. And I was like, I'll be okay. I'll finish real soon, then I'll call you. And then as soon as I hung up, I put on like some rock song and I like was all pumped up and screaming and excited and like running and racing hard. And I was like, man, I don't know if that's healthy for to go through that mixture of hormones and emotions, but it was quite a wild ride.
Yeah, that's how it felt, man. That's exactly.
So, yeah. That's you'll feel that a lot more.
So I actually had like all three of my kids and my husband, they had shown up much later. Like they weren't there the whole day, but they were there. I think when I started the last loop, and so then they were still waiting at the finish. So it was really cool to come like towards that field, like heading towards the finish line, and here comes like, you know, I have a 6-year-old, 9-year-old, 12-year-old. They're all barefoot, like feral little kids running around and chasing towards me. And then, you know, the 12-year-old's talking smack because he's like sprinting towards the finish and he's like, you're not really going that fast, Mom. And I'm like, you know, I kind of have a few miles on my legs, so like maybe a little slack, but it's really cool like to have it be so small and close that like they can just show up and like come running barefoot through the finish line with me. Like that's pretty cool.
I saw that. Yeah. That was super sweet. I watched you as you finished and your kids ran up and that was amazing.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. They like always keep me humble. They're like, you're not really like, you know, it's not such a big deal what you're doing. You're not really that fast though. You know?
You know? And that's like the best part too. You know, you cross that finish line, you know, what was it like to cross that finish line?
I'll go first just on this one, just because I didn't cross the finish line because he literally just left. So I was like, oh, that's okay though. And so like, yeah, the race director was still there and he's like, no, he told me before I left on the last loop. I'm like, are you sure it's okay that I go out there again? Because like, yeah, it's going to be a while. You guys still here? Like, I know you're probably going to shut down and it's okay. I can just go home. But he's like, no, you got to finish. I was like, okay. And then he's like, yeah, he'll be here, you know, with the time I'm at. And he's like, and if he's not, then I'll record your time and, you know, so you can still get your finish. So I was like, all right, cool. So that was it for me. Yeah, the last loop was fun because my husband ended up doing it with me. And because he came out, yeah, again, like if the family comes out to this whole ultra thing, my family's, half of them are on board with it. The two older ones, the ones that are almost teenagers, they're like, eh, we'll stay home. We've seen it. But my youngest loves to come out and be supportive and my husband comes out. And so then, yeah, that last loop, he was like, well, I didn't bring my running shoes. And so my buddy Will was like hanging out, waiting for me to be done. And he gave, because he stopped at the 30 because he wasn't feeling good. So he gave my husband his shoes. He's like, do we have the same size shoes? He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, where are my trail shoes? And so we did that last loop together, and that was fun. And then, yeah, so I got back, and Scott, the race director, yeah, he was waiting and got my time and stuff. And then I got a shirt for being the last one out there. So I was like, hey, really? He's like, these are for the top finishers, but you were out there the longest. Get a shirt. I'm like, I get a shirt for being last? That's awesome. I was like, this is the best day ever.
You really?
Yeah, no one's Scott. That's not surprising. He stayed out there for you. That was awesome.
No, it was so awesome. Like, so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just really wanted a banana. And apparently, if you finish as slow as I do, the bananas are gone. So,
no.
Kind of had like this Glenn Ross moment where it's like closers get coffee, right? So I was like, you know, I got there and there was like no bananas. And I was like, oh, but Scott was like, here's some pickle juice, man, you know.
But there was brisket. Did you get any brisket?
I probably would have thrown up. All the food was so amazing, but I'm still training my body to be able to eat some, like, you know, and I normally eat pretty like somewhat clean, so I probably would have thrown up if I would have ate that, but that's something I need to work on. It looked amazing, though, and the quesadillas looked amazing.
Those quesadillas were so good. I keep talking about, like, those were so good. They hit the spot with potatoes in them. Yeah.
Crossing the finish line, it felt good. I've never, I don't,
I usually, I don't, get first place finishes very often. And so, you know, by the third loop, I had started envisioning getting a first place finish. And by the fourth loop, when I overtook the first place runner, it started becoming a reality. So like that whole last loop, I was just envisioning what it would be like to finish first. And also, like I said, envisioning that there was, you know, the second place runner was always right behind me, ready to like strike on that last mile and overtake me. So crossing that finish line felt really good to, you know, get first place. But then it also felt really good because I had been thinking about, as you guys mentioned, Scott's brisket. So it took me about an hour after I finished to like for my stomach to settle down and to cool down so I can actually eat some of the brisket. I had to drink some water and pickle juice for an hour and kind of think about the way I felt. But yeah, once that hour was up, the brisket tasted really, really good. And I kind of hung around after the race for about an hour or two just to hang out and talk to people and see all the other finishers. So it was a very, very fun finish line with everyone there eating, hanging out.
Yeah, that's always the best part about a lot of these ultras is, you know, people just hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Scott's big thing is he wants to put on events. He was talking about this. He wants to put on events that not a lot of other people do. And as a runner himself, he wants to incorporate things that he likes. And one of the things is food after a race. I mean, you, Joseph, you're the king of that. The Skunk Ape night run and potluck, emphasis on the potluck part. Like half the fun of Skunk Ape is eating a variety of, you know, Publix is down the road. So you get some Publix fried chicken, but then you also have like people's homemade desserts, homemade dishes. And so I think Scott's trying to capture a little bit of that essence for his after race party, you know, have an awesome, fun course, have nice pre-race stuff, and then also have that fun party afterwards. So he's doing some good work trying to make some cool offers.
I didn't get to hang out as long as I would have liked to. I think I was in such a happy little headspace that I would have hung out for a couple of hours just gnawing on brisket. But there's that whole like, you know, the kids are there, the husband's there, they take off. As soon as I get home, you know, my husband's like, tag, you're it, you know. I kind of have to just like jump right back into it. But it was a cool vibe. And I know that like I'm pretty introverted, you know, most of the time, but like I finished that race and the people that were parked next to us, like all of a sudden they were my best friends. And, you know, I was thinking like, maybe I should invite them back to the house to go swimming. They live a couple hours away. And I was like, no, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't know, but you know, I think I definitely like, I'll probably come back next year if they host it again and plan to hang out a little bit more. Cause I thought there was a pretty good vibe going on afterwards.
Yeah. And for these things, like we've been mentioning, the Florida alternate community, it's vast, but it seems like the same people show up at like every single race. And so the more of these races that you do, the more you're like, oh, hey, I know that person, that person, that person. And so it's almost becomes like even for the smaller ones, it becomes like a nice social event.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I guess we could start to wrap it up with, you know, what was the good, the bad, and the ugly out there for the funnest 50K?
Oh, man, good, bad, and ugly. The good was that it was a fun, unique course that you can't find anywhere else in Florida. The bad was that it was quite humid out there and quite hot. But I mean, you're running a race in Florida, so that's what you get. And the ugly, you know, I have to say I had a really good time out there. And so, you know, I try to find the bad in everything and the ugly in everything. But for the funnest 50K, I couldn't really find anything that I'd say it was ugly. Maybe the lack of bananas. Maybe you know, Brandon would agree. Maybe the lack of bananas was the ugly for me.
Oh, there were plenty of bananas, just to say, but not, you know, you gotta be quicker, I guess.
We need more bananas.
No, it was great. I guess I'll go. Yeah. So the good, I mean, it was a big milestone for me, you know, a big achievement. The course was beautiful and the ridge, you know, I guess, quote unquote, ridge running or whatever, as people call it, was really cool. The bad, I mean, it seemed like the first part of the race kind of introduced you into like some really like big, you know, like climbing hills. And then it like ended with that too. So it was kind of like slapping you in the face in the beginning and then like almost like kicking you out. You know, cause like right when you think you're done, you're like, no, I know I got this one last one right here. and then the ugly. I mean, my last lap was ugly. You know, there wasn't anything pretty about it, but I'll get better. I had a lot of fun time, and I'll be better next time. So it was a great race.
I think for me, like, the good is, I think I said it before, like, it was nice to see a bunch of other people from outside the area enjoying trails that, like, I spend a lot of time on. And, like, I saw a lot of smiles out there. So I was like, okay, it's not just me that loves it, you know, out here. So that was cool. I'd say the only bad thing was, you know, the course was originally supposed to be closed to the bikers, and that got changed last minute. And there weren't many out there, and I didn't really have any negative experiences with the bikers that were out there. Like, they were usually yelling, like, supportive things, and most of them are pretty cool. But there was one group that just, like, completely blocked the trail, and they're just talking, and, like, me and another runner are coming up, and they're just staring at us, like, not moving. So you know, that's not anything that the race director can control. Like, that wasn't his call for it to be open. But I'd say that was probably the only thing that I saw that was kind of like meh. And it was just the one instance. So and I will say that, like, those trails out there, like, I got to give credit to Ridge Riders is the mountain bike group that, like, maintains them. And they put a crap load of work into maintaining those trails and the features. And I know Scott and James put in a lot of hours out there as well. Just, you know, weed whacking and rebuilding boardwalks and keeping up with all that. So those trails grow over real fast. So it takes a lot of volunteer hours to keep them in good shape.
Yeah, these trails are a labor of love for those mountain bikers. So they treat them very well. So that was also something good about the ultra running community is most of us don't litter. We respect the trails. And so, you know, hopefully relations with, you know, the Mountain Bike Association is well maintained, because I could, you know, a couple of them are probably going to be like, oh, these runners out here, they're going to be dropping their gel packets and, you know, defecating on the trail. And I didn't see any of that. Everyone was very respectful of the trails. So, you know, hopefully going forward, yeah, the relationship is strong there.
All right. So for me, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the good was those quesadillas. I'm not going to stop with that. Okay. For real though. There was a lot of good. Like, it really was. Yeah. After I got through. So for, this is the bad for me was that first loop. So I got through that though. And then I had a lot of fun just finding the fun along the way and just getting through the next bit. And so, yeah, and great, great race support, you know, awesome vibe, challenging, fun course, like a totally different thing. And yeah, the bad, the humidity, but that's what it is. And so that really got to me, but then I had to learn through that. And the ugly was, yeah, just for me, that fall on the fifth loop. I seriously had like whiplash the next day. I'm like, I need to learn how to fall better if I'm going to do these kind of races. Cause I woke up the next morning. I was like, man, the thing that hurts the most is my neck. Like, what is my neck and my back hurt? And I was like, oh yeah. Cause I hit the ground so hard. Like, I just went down so hard. Like, oh, so that was it. I need to learn to fall better. It's another learning experience.
I have one ugly thing that I forgot about. Like, I don't usually chafe, and I chafed like on the sports bra, like the elastic band part of a bra, all the time, and have never had issue. And it was like in the front and in the back. And so, you know, I did the whole come home and go to get in the shower, and it was just like, ah, you know, around there. And I'm like, why? Like, this is the same bra I wear all the time. I never have an issue. Like, you know, I run in kind of weather, and then it was like, nope, today's the day that we're just going to like rub you raw. So that was
not. I always love that moment when you go back to like take the shower and you're like, I'm going to find it. Yeah. I'm going to find where I stayed. Like, I want to take this shower real bad, but ugh. Where are you at?
I guess you could say that's the funnest part of it.
Yeah.
Well, hey, y'all, this was awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey.
Awesome. Well, hey, it was great talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a good night.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Yeah,
have a good night, Liz.
Yeah, thank you. All right, bye.
And there we have it for the funnest 50K episode 99. Heck yeah. And hey, you know, it was really fun out there at the funnest 50K. And also, hey, gotta give a quick shout out to the Ridge Riders out at the park that the funnest 50K is at. You know, hey, they dealt with some runners for the weekend, and we definitely appreciate that. And episode 100 is coming. And let me tell you what, I did not plan for it to happen, but it's going to be Lewis Coco and the Lollipop 240. His journey, we get to hear all about it. You know, he had an awesome crew. It was awesome seeing those Facebook posts. So I'm excited to hear about that Lollipop 240 from Lewis. And hey, until next time, happy trails.